Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soci.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soci. This show is available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Well, friends, I hope you got to see some good films, or at least good that are new, at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. We will get to the grab a pencil portion of the show in a little bit. I will have an interview with Taylor Grieger, who is one of the subjects of the documentary Hell or High Seas, which is now out in your local theaters and or streaming, depending on where you look. And so we'll get to that. But I got to attend a morning press screening, which is nice because I haven't done one of those in a while. But yes, I finally got to see Dune, or as a don't tell you in the ad campaign, Dune Part One. There's got to be at least two more parts because it's a dense book. So I find that fascinating. And I know I've grumbled about the one book, one film theory. I understand it, I guess, with Dune, I suppose. But so the other preface before I get into this, and this won't take long, is the last time I saw the David Lynch film version of Dune was when it came out in 1984. And honestly, I got a stack of movies already. I have no desire to go back and revisit it. Although you can read the then and now reviews of the Film Yap and Midwest Film Journal and the Independent Critic and all the other Midwest Film Journal, Medium Cool. I'm sure they're doing compare contrast to David Lynch's version. And this one, directed by Denis Villeneuve, Villeneuve. And this is a filmmaker whose work I enjoy. Of course, films like Prisoners, Blade Runner 2049, Arrival. And then what I love about his work, and I use the Arrival as an example, and it happens quite a bit in this film version of Dune, of having gorgeous locations and then able to incorporate some major CG, some impressive CG work. And in this case, shooting out in the Middle East and being able to incorporate flying insect contraptions. I sound so old. It looks great. Or as my buddy Glenn Dobbs, who's been a regular guest on this show, has referred to it as 50 Shades of Brown. There is a lot of desert and there's a lot of brown in this one. That being said, for a part one, it's a well-done setup. I didn't feel lost in the weeds. I know there's a lot of talk about the spice, and they introduce you to the worlds that you need to know as far as the setup. It was great because I had a friend, Glenn, who tried to explain all of the books to me, and I don't need that. I just need what's on the screen in this case with this one. And fairly straightforward as far as why it's important, who's in charge of taking care of it. There's going to be some intrigue. There's going to be some betrayal. And then we have a young man who's going to get out of adolescence and innocence and have to put his big boy pants on really quick. And that's, of course, Timothée Chalamet in this one. And I was reminded watching this, I'm like, oh, yeah, George Lucas read Dune, I'm sure, in the 60s. And look at how that turned out. So, yeah, big owing of thanks to the Star Wars franchise to Frank Herbert's work. So, pretty good performances. I know Timothée Chalamet is going to look 12 for a few more years, so just work that while you can. Oscar Isaacs, Javier Bardem. Bardem's going to be able to do more in the second film, I hope, and as well as Dave Bautista. Oscar Isaac's just been having a big year, and Stellan Skarsgård is, you know, he's the Kenneth MacMillan role, and ooh boy, it's not pleasant. And nice to see that that both Josh Brolin and Jason Momoa get to take turns playing the Han Solo-like older authoritative character. It's almost like the sergeants in Platoon, one nice and one not so nice. Anyway. So yeah, it's a good setup at 2.5 hours or so, and hopefully part two will really come with gangbusters, I'll say. I wasn't as bored in this part one as I was, say, Lord of the Rings, so, and that's saying something. So yeah, I saw it, I liked it. Man, bring on part two. And now I've heard that they have not shot part two. I thought they would have done something like this in Succession. So I guess we're going to wait and see how it goes at the box office. So there's that. So, yeah, I'm actually recommending Dune. Good. It's good. That's all. All right. Moving on. There is a documentary called Hell or High Seas, which is out in your favorite streaming services, and it's in select theaters. You have to look it up, friends. And I got to interview Taylor Grieger, who is one of the subjects of this documentary. I haven't done this in a while. Here's some audio.
Expect in a pretty good storm tonight. Not one of those hit you and quit you types.
Dream that I've had since I was a kid, man. All I wanted to do was sail around the world.
And I joined the military as a stepping stone to make that possible. After getting out of the military, I was diagnosed with PTSD. And it was pure hell.
I ended up putting a Glock to my head and pulled the trigger. And it didn't go off. What am I still doing here? Was it a second chance?
I wanted to show my buddies getting out that they weren't the only ones going through this.
That kid loves with a huge heart. And to him, all the military guys are his family.
So I took up an impossible challenge, sailing around Cape Horn to raise awareness about what's really going on with veterans.
I put everything into this expedition. I've lost everything for this expedition, too.
Boat's leaking, caught on fire last night, pushing our luck.
I question myself all the time. Is everything that I've given gonna change anything?
You feel alive out here. You're working with the winds, you're working with the water. You know, she beats you down, but at the same time, she rewards you when that sun comes out, and it's just a ray of sunlight coming out over a glacier.
That kid won't give up. He won't give up on anything.
You're not prepared for everything. All you can do is just take the storm and keep on pushing through it.
Life is worth the fight.
There you go. A little audio from the documentary Hell or High Seas, which is now out and available. And earlier this week, I got to talk to Taylor Grieger, who, by the way, if I say, I didn't get a chance to ask him who if they made a feature film of the story, which I hope they don't. The documentary is fine as is. It's really fine fine filmmaking, especially with two guys with cameras. But there's it is an exciting romp. If you're into white knuckle documentaries like Free Solo, you'll definitely dig this. And but I think if Eric Bana and Matthew McConaughey had a child, those could be the guys that play Taylor Grieger. Taylor, you're a really good sport. Anyway, here's the chat I had with Taylor earlier this week. Taylor, for the sake of the audience, what brought you to your original quest?
Yeah, man, thanks for having me. And it's a really long story. I hope we have enough time. but yeah, when I first got out of the Navy, I had a hell of a time adjusting back into civilian society, and a lot of my buddies that I deployed with were killing themselves. So I wanted to do something to let them know that they weren't alone, that what they're going through, what happened to their body overseas was normal. And the only way Stephen and I, Stephen was on the expedition with me. The only way that we figured we could reach every veteran in the States was through media, through film. And we thought if anybody was going to pay attention to it, we'd have to do the baddest thing in the world. And in the sailing community, that's sail around Cape Horn. So we did that, man. We used our trip to Cape Horn as a backdrop to my adjustment back into the civilian world and how that affects the body and how your body needs time to heal.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it all started, man. And then, 3 years later, we're done.
It's a, life, like a lot of things, don't always go according to plan, as we find out the hard way sometimes.
Nope. I can 100% and honestly say a single plan we had did not happen. Everything just went to hell as soon as we left the dock.
You brought up getting back into civilian life. I think of the scene in The Hurt Locker where Jeremy Renner's character goes to a grocery store. Is that a fair comparison in that scene?
Yeah, grocery stores are weird when you first come back, man. I mean, when you're overseas, you get to choose from one toothpaste when you're out there, and you come back and everybody's fighting and pushing each other inside the grocery store over a plethora of food and items, and you're just like, what the hell is going on? The best way I've heard it described is my partner that I've started our sailing foundation with, Cameron. He's medically retired in the Marine Corps, and the way he describes it is when you get your eyes dilated and you have to wear those black glasses the whole next day because the light just hurts your eyes if you look into it and your senses are just on overload. That's what it's like coming back to this society, man. When you're overseas, you're fighting to stay alive, and you're looking at every single little thing all the time. All these things can kill you. And when you come back to the States, and your body is still used to that. It's still operating at that tempo. Your senses are on that level constantly. So when you're around that many people and that many things going on, it's pretty overwhelming.
I remember I had a high school teacher who had served, and so he had been teaching, gosh, probably already 20 years at this point, but sneaking up on him was not a good idea. And that was my first encounter with somebody who had that kind of condition.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't do that.
Mm-hmm. So 10,000 miles in 200 days was the original goal. The Mount Everest of sailing, I think I read it in my notes. Why did you ask Stephen to join you?
So I actually linked, Stephen and I went to high school together.
Mm-hmm.
And, whenever we finished high school, I went into the military and he went into academia. And I read a series of short stories he was publishing when he was finishing his PhD in Scotland. And they were about veterans returning back to the States, and I hit him up and I was like, dude, how are you getting this so accurate, man? These stories you're writing are real and raw. And I was blown away by what he was putting out because he wasn't in the military. And so he spent his entire PhD researching veterans assimilating back into civilian society. And so, I was living it, and he did all the research to back it up. And he honestly saved my life because he was the first person, a civilian, let alone to say, this is normal, man. Your body's changed. Your mind on a physiological level has changed. You know, when you're around stress for that many years consistently thinking you're going to die, the cortisol that's released in your body on a constant level shrinks your hippocampus. And I didn't know that, man. And as soon as he told me that, I was like, the light switch went off. Like, all right, it's going to take time to heal, and I can heal. He was the first person to say that to me. And so he came in because he saved my life, and the things that he researched kept me alive. So we wanted to use his research and what he's been studying and get it out there to all the other veterans that were going through what I was going through.
And how did you get approached about this becoming a documentary, about this quest being filmed?
Oh, man. So when we set out, the goal was to use this expedition and the film we captured out there to reach every veteran, and kind of like the dream scenario was to make a documentary to reach them. We were putting out little YouTube videos and stuff in the meantime, but we didn't really have any means or know-how to create and publish or produce a documentary But when the boat caught fire off of Chile, and we had to come back to the States to raise some funds to fix the boat, Stephen linked up with Fresh Fly Productions out of Philadelphia and, you know, showed him our film. This is after about 100 no's. You know, we chopped the film that we shot around a lot, and a lot of people didn't want it, didn't want to take it on. But they saw our film and were like, holy hell, this is one of the greatest things we've ever seen and the story that needs to be told. And, you know, they picked it up and they turned the documentary we have out now into what it is. You know, it's just, I mean, our story makes sense and it's fluid and it's a great documentary. It's something we could have never done for sure. It helps us do it 100%.
So just to let the audience know, so basically you guys were, it was basically you two filming, correct?
Yep. Steve and I had a couple cameras, drones, and GoPros, and we kind of learned along the way. We used a lot of YouTube, watching how to get shots and stuff.
Yep.
And how to not suck, I guess.
That's life in general, Taylor. That's good. Those are words to live by, really.
How to not suck.
So
we came back with hundreds of hours of footage, and thank God for Fresh Fly because they helped us piece it together.
Well, as I was watching it, there were moments where I wondered, this is how well the film was shot, was it felt like there was a third party at times. I was just intrigued by that. So, kudos to the both of you, as well as the film company for piecing that together. But it did at times feel like there was a third party fly on the wall.
So John was a rescue swimmer with me in Guam, and when he came out, when we got to Ecuador, he just got out of the military. He would film a lot as well. And then after we linked up with Fresh Fly, they came down with a crew and got a lot of those shots when we were in Patagonia. So a lot of those beautiful shots that are captured that don't look like what we filmed are John Pope, man. He's our director of photography. He's just a really good dude.
Taylor, what I really liked about Hell or High Seas was you had a really good combination of beautiful photography and at times frightening photography. On top of that, using animation, especially in moments like with the hurricane. How did you guys find that balance as far as, it seems like it's what you saw is what you filmed. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. We tried to film everything. And it went both ways. So there were moments that were just so beautiful we could never describe, and we knew nobody would be able to appreciate it. And we made the conscious decision to not film those moments, just to keep those and let those moments stay out there. Same thing for the storms, except we were more focused on keeping the boat afloat and not dying. And so a lot of our attention didn't go to filming those moments. And more so just trying to stay alive. So like the animation scenes, we really felt were the only way to do those storms justice.
Mm. I wondered what if there was a code or if there was a phrase that you guys use when you realize, okay, we got to actually put the cameras down, because more than one shot I saw you guys steering the boat with your feet, and I almost visualized you filming while driving at the same time, but that's of course during a calm situation.
Right. Yeah, you can't do that during a storm. A lot of those moments we decided not to film were kind of just left unsaid. I mean, we were just sitting there taking it all in, and there wasn't really words that needed to be said to say, hey, let's just keep this for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I was impressed with, because this you do show, I think, at times a warts and all about the about a trip like this, but there is the audio of you two kind of getting tense, kind of getting snippy with each other. What made you decide to keep that into the film?
Yeah, we thought it was important to keep in the film because we're living in close quarters with somebody for 2.5 years. And it's not all rainbows and butterflies, We're on a 36-foot boat, so it's, imagine space 36 feet long that you live with another person. It's not always easy. And we didn't want to show that. We want people to have the real experience, So if we didn't portray what it was like in those tension moments, it wouldn't have been real.
How was it? I mean, how long did it take before you didn't notice that the camera was on? Or was that an ongoing thing?
Oh, no, man. That took a while. A couple months, you know. Some of our first shots are super awkward. But after a couple months of always just leaving the camera on, you don't really care anymore.
Cool. One of the things I also enjoyed about I was taking my notes, I wrote down the film title Apollo 13. In a case, well, we sort of know how it ends because in this case, I'm talking to you right now. But do you still, you know, are you still engrossed in the journey? And that's definitely the case with Hell or High Seas.
Am I still engrossed with the journey?
I mean, from watching the film is what I meant.
Not so much, man. I mean, it's been years now. So we started that trip in 2017. So the film doesn't really hit me like it would the first time you see it, for sure.
Okay. How did Robert Irvine become involved with the project?
That's a good question, yeah. So when we started working with Fresh Fly, one of their production assistants used to work with him, and they sent him the film, and he saw it, and he was like, this is the greatest documentary I've ever seen. And he wanted to help and be a part of it any way he could. And so, I mean, it was after he saw it, he was on board, you know. He was a part of the team.
Mm-hmm. How many times have you watched the film, and going back to once it was completed?
We've done 9 screenings, like private screenings with different nonprofits and veterans groups around the country.
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen it 10 times.
Still okay?
Yeah, dude. I mean, honestly, it's not the greatest thing getting in front of a crowd of strangers and reliving the most embarrassing moment of your life over and over again.
Sometime I'll have to tell you about Robert embarrassing me on stage, but that's for another time.
Good, yeah, I can use those. But I'll say the coolest thing to come up from it is a lot of veterans show up from Vietnam. I had a couple guys I met actually from World War II, and they'll come up and say, dude, I've been living with this for decades by myself. And they just say, thank you for telling the story and helping people understand and empathize with what veterans go through. So those times I watched the film and get to meet those guys make everything a day worth it, for sure.
Mm-hmm. I guess in lieu of like the regular film festival circuit, it sounds like you're really getting to an audience that obviously can relate in one way, shape, or form, like you just said.
Yeah, and that was kind of a point of contention with us and the production team and everybody involved in the film, was people wanted to go to film circuits. And I'm telling them, I'm like, man, the veteran community is going to see this, and they're going to understand. I don't think we need to do it, because there's a lot of time involved with these film circuits. And in all honesty, dude, my buddies were still killing themselves as we were producing this film. So I lost 3 of my really good friends that I could play with. And we didn't have the time, dude. We had to get this film out and try and stop veteran suicide, man. Let them know that you can heal and you can live a healthy life, and it can be beautiful again.
Mm-hmm.
So we were up against the clock. Guys are still killing themselves. It's not slowing down. So we had to get it out.
For folks who wanted to learn more about this, where can people go? What phone numbers can they check out? What websites can they go to?
Yeah, our documentary's website, hellorhighseas.com, will show you where we're screening, and there's a link to watch it. And then we have our resources on that website as well. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can just email the email on that website, and I'll see it and we'll make it happen.
Mm-hmm. And I know there's a postscript, and now I want to ask about the postscript of the postscript. I was going to ask you, Taylor, how are things going for you now? I can hear in the background how things are going at times. How's the family?
Yeah, yeah, I'm daddy daycare when I'm not failing. I'm currently chasing my little 2-year-old around the yard.
2-year-old?
It's good. And I bring her sailing with me, so we've got a good life. I've learned how to live with my body, and for me, that's just getting out and adventure therapy programs like sailing I got to do it at least once a month to be healthy.
I was about to say, how long a break did you take after the trip was finished before you went back sailing?
Almost as soon as I got back, man, it broke as all hell when I got back. I had to start working. So when people buy boats around the world and need it where they're living, they'll hire me to bring the boat back. So I started doing that within 2 months of getting back to the States.
Mm-hmm. All right, shifting gears a little bit, since this is a film show and you have a 2-year-old, is there something that the 2-year-old can watch every day for months? Have you reached that stage of parenthood yet?
No, I try not to. We stay outside pretty much all day long.
Okay, all right.
So we watch bugs all day long.
That's okay. That's perfectly fine. When my daughter was about that age, she could watch the same thing every day for 2 months. I mean, and fortunately, she had not one but two films. One was Monsters, Inc., and the other was Finding Nemo. And as a dad, I realized I got off really easy. I mean, your kid could be obsessed with some garbage that you have to watch every day. So, you know, wishful thinking, you know, about when you reach that point. So
we do hit the Finding Nemo on our road trips. She loves that.
Okay. That's good. And Taylor, who cinematically, is there a film that gets sailing correct, gets it right?
That's hard, man. And that's why we wanted to show all our bad moments, is because a lot of the film you see is like excitement and happiness and beautiful. And real sailing isn't like that at all.
Right.
It's hard and you're sleep deprived and hungry. It's really tough. So there's not another film like that, no.
Well, I would say, and on the flip side, it's not all is lost.
Right. That film's kind of like a common joke in the sailing community.
Yeah?
Yeah, man, there's so many things that guy did, I just don't understand. They should have had some sailing consultants on the set of that film for sure.
I wondered if there were certain, yeah, if you noticed things like that. My wife is one to notice actors who don't play the instruments they play.
Yeah, that one is painful. Sorry, Robert Redford, if you're listening to this.
I wish. So, all right, I will tell you the Robert Irvine story since I brought it up earlier. I got to MC for Robert. Back when he was starting to develop his live show. And we were doing this at Clues Memorial Hall in Butler, at Butler University. And we were doing a kind of impromptu auction. And, you know, Robert being Robert, he bellows. And, you know, I'm kind of the straight man and I bounce off his stuff. And we were doing something and I flubbed a line. And he told me, drop and give me 20. And he starts to remove my jacket. I'm like, oh, geez, okay. And I'm like, I can't even remember the last time I did 20 push-ups. And so, and I am built like the number zero. And I get down, and the audience starts counting. And yeah, exactly. So I believe, to borrow an old joke, when it comes to the military, I'm 4K. In case of war, I'm a hostage. And so first five are okay. Then he can see that I'm straining. And Robert being Robert drops down right next to me and bangs out 20 effortlessly. The crowd is cheering. And he's also looking at me while dropping these 20. And I stop and I'm just on my belly on the ground with my chin in my hand. And he bangs out the 20 and leaps up to his feet with thunderous applause. And then I'm still laying on the ground. And then he leans down and smacks my bottom in front of everybody. Yeah, there was that. I went on the mic and went, jealous, ladies. And then afterwards, backstage, we were cracking up. He said it was great. And I told him, you know, I've had dreams of people from Food Network slapping me in the butt. You're not on that list. So.
Perfect.
Not even close.
That's,
so.
I can see it perfectly, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, he's a funny guy. So, all right, Taylor. Once more, please plug. Where can people check out Hell or High Seas?
Yeah, guys. If anybody listening really hears what we're trying to do, go ahead and watch Hell or High Seas. It's a documentary. You can go to hellorhighseas.com to see where it's playing. It's on all the video on demand platforms and the cable. So, yeah, man, you guys watch it. Let us know. We're trying to get top 10 on documentaries, so we need some help.
And if somebody wants to help out somebody who is dealing with PTSD, what can they do? Where can they go?
You know, in all honesty, I get that question a lot in the Q&As, and the best thing to do is watch film, because that shows all the research and how the body can heal. So when people say they have family members that are getting out and they're worried about them, I point them towards the film to talk about the why. And then we do have a sailing foundation now called American Odysseus Sailing Foundation, and we're actually setting sail tomorrow with a group of 7 veterans. We're racing down the Texas coast. So we take guys out for 3-4 days at a time to sail and get out there and talk about it.
Okay. Taylor, thank you so much for your time. Congratulations on the film, and enjoy the family.
Hey, thank you for your time, man. I really appreciate it.
That is Taylor Grieger, one of the subjects of the documentary Hell or High Seas. And as you hear near the end, one of the executive producers of Hell or High Seas is film sociology regular Robert Irvine. Hope to get him back on the show sometime. But you can go to hellorhighseas.com to click, to rent, or buy. You can get it on Google Play, Apple TV, YouTube, Fandango, VUDU, and Microsoft. Yes, I'm reading off the website. That's what I do. So, yeah, look for Hell or High Seas, white knuckle action. You're listening, and very moving material as well. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Okay, before we grab a pencil, let's see what's going on around the state. Over at the Tibbs Drive-In, TBA, very popular. Over at the Skyline Drive-In in Shelbyville, this weekend is Halloween Kills plus Venom, Let There Be Carnage. Wednesday, October 27th at the Skyline, The Toxic Avenger and Sergeant Kabuki Man NYPD for you trauma fans out there. That is happening at the Skyline Drive-In in Shelbyville. Over at the Art Craft Theater in Franklin on Friday and Saturday, 2 and 7:30 p.m., Monster Squad from 1987, and Sammy Terry is going to be there from 2 to 4 at the stage near the courthouse and from 4 to 7 in the Historic Art Craft Theater. He will also introduce the 7:30 p.m. showing of Monster Squad on October 23rd. So there is that. Speaking of Sammy Terry, if you go to SammyTerry.com, we mentioned Franklin, yes. Wow. He's going to be at the Scarlet Lane Sobro Speakeasy on Wednesday, October 27th. And he'll be in Logansport at the Elks Parade and Stage Show at the State Theater in Logansport on October 28th. Facebook Live, of course, is the dungeon, his dungeons. That's happening Friday, October 29th at 8 p.m. Saturday, October 30th, he'll be in Terror Haute at the Moonlight Drive-In. That's October 30th. Halloween night, trick-or-treating at Washington Square Mall in Indianapolis at 6 o'clock on Halloween. And then there will be a First Friday live broadcast on November 5th. So, yeah, SammyTerry.com. Hoping to get him on next week. Fingers crossed, friends. Over at IU Cinema on Sunday the 24th at 1 o'clock as a part of their Sunday Matinee Classics from 1943, Heaven Can Wait. Tuesday, October 26th at 7 p.m., the 2019 drama Dark Waters. And Sunday, October 31st, your Halloween show at 1 o'clock, Battle Royale, the extended cut. Man, jump on that. There you go. Happy Halloween from IU Cinema. Over at the Can-Can in Indy, this weekend, they are showing Dune, Clue, the 22nd through the, that's running through the 24th. The 25th and 27th, Donnie Darko. The 26th and 28th, Evil Dead 2. The Wisdom Wednesday second-year anniversary movie night on October 27th. And then coming soon, of course, is The French Dispatch and Halloween, the original John Carpenter film, October 29th through the 31st. Youngstown on November 1st, The Spirit in Place, B-Movies, and Bad History on November 9th, and then Just Like Me on November 11th. You can go to cancanindie.com for all the information over there. All right, friends, grab a pencil. Let's see what you've been watching this week. And we start on Twitter with Chaz writing, "No safe spaces. It was good." Thank you, Chaz. Over to Facebook, we start with Joan, who writes, "Hocus Pocus. Also watched The Secret Love on Netflix. It was beautiful." By the way, thanks to everybody that came out to the theater at the Fort last Saturday for the quote-unquote double bill of Hocus Pocus and Night of the Living Dead. I had not seen Hocus Pocus from start to finish since it came out in July of 1993. And as I found out, because I kind of, a lot of people bawled the film out because it was released in the summer when it screams Halloween. Disney didn't want it to interfere with the other October movie they were putting out, The Nightmare Before Christmas, which makes a lot of sense. And it turned out to work for in their favor because now Hocus Pocus is a big cult hit and they're making a second one. So there you go. All right. Barry writes Quantum of Solace and Gone Girl. Pam writes Hocus Pocus, Halloween 1 and 2, the originals, Jeepers Creepers, the original Carrie, and House of Wax, the remake, which is definitely not as good as the original. Thank you, Pam. Ross writes Mary Elizabeth Winstead's magnum opus, Kate, as well as Many Saints of Newark. Adam writes Come From Away. David writes Many Saints of Newark. John writes Howard's End. Daniel writes, "We've been watching a movie called Whatever's on YouTube. It's hit or miss, but we're pretty tired." Daniel, I've been there. Hang in there, pal. Gary writes, "No Time to Die, The Nightmare Before Christmas, and The Gospel According to Al Green." Pamela writes, "The Card Counter." Wayne writes, "Captain Fantastic. Great. Lived up to the hype." He also writes, "Cry Macho. Maybe the worst Clint Eastwood movie ever. Formulaic wooden dialogue felt like it was written by an AI. Revisit The Rookie and get back to me, just in case. Kathy writes, "Dear Evan Hansen." Grace writes, "I watched Little Women, the Greta Gerwig one, last week. Just made me love the story more." Thank you, Grace. Michael writes, "Red Sun and Jamboree." Kathleen writes, "A Song of Lunch." Kate writes, "Hairspray." Bob writes, "Dune." Mark writes, "A Midsummer Night's Dream." Which version? Joe Shearer writes, "Halloween Kills twice, and Venom, Let There Be Carnage." Okay. Dan writes, "House on Haunted Hill, What We Do in the Shadows, and Burnt Offerings." Thomas writes, "The Heiress with Olivia de Havilland." Okay. Frank writes, "I've been waiting. Bring me the French Dispatch now." Okay. Well, I can't do anything about that, but we'll see. Jeff writes, "Hubie Halloween." Chloe writes, "Odd Combo, but Diana the Musical on Netflix, and we need to talk about Kevin." Chloe, hopefully that wasn't a double feature. I hope you're doing all right. Hugs, dear. Tammy writes, "Serendipity for the umpteenth time." Man, just give him the phone number. Sam writes, "Halloween Kills, The Sixth Sense, and The French Dispatch." Thank you, Sam Watermeyer. Guy writes, "The Father with Anthony Hopkins. Watched it on a 9-hour plane ride. Fell asleep repeatedly throughout it, too." That's not a complete blame of the film, I'm guessing, Guy. Susan writes, "Time After Time, a classic." Yes, that was the sci-fi film I watched in Dr. Gehring's film genre class. And fun stuff with Malcolm McDowell and David Warner and Mary Steenburgen. John writes, "Toy Story, Wizard of Oz, Hotel Transylvania, Rock and Rolla, and Getting Gaudy." Kurt writes, "13 Days at Beltrace, another October-themed film, and No Time to Die at the Cinema." Thanks, Kurt. Give my best to the gang over at Beltrace. Lou writes, Lou Harry, "The Harvey Girls, The Starving Game, and The French Dispatch." Kara writes, "Black Widow." Eric writes, "The Babadook and Midsommar." Oh, there's a double bill. Brian writes, "Peter Rabbit 2, Wrath of Man, and Free Guy." Austin, medium cool. Frida, Viva La Vida, as well as Halloween Kills. Erica writes, Corridors of Blood, hosted by Sammy Terry, complete with 80s commercials. Thank you, Chief. Kim writes, The Best of Enemies. Jose writes, The Last Duel, as well as Heave and Cleave. Beverly writes, Dr. No, From Russia with Love, Thunderball, Goldfinger, You Only Live Twice, and Diamonds Are Forever. Sean is very grateful. Doug writes, Thief, Rudy, In and Out, A Mighty Wind, This Old Cub, The Breakup, Diana the Musical, and Judas and the Black Messiah. Chris writes, Fallen Angels. David writes, Dr. Strangelove. Channing writes, Halloween Kills. Steve writes, The Village. Stephanie writes, The Original Frankenstein with Boris Karloff. Pam writes, All of the Halloweens, including the new one. That's a stretch, Pam. Dylan writes, The Black Cat from 1934, The Raven, Sleepaway Camp, and Halloween Kills, with his comment in parentheses, Lord, it's bad. When Brandy and I left the movie theater, I kept very quiet because I knew of her love of the Halloween franchise. When we got the car and she told me how disappointed she was, I was so relieved because I was afraid I was just missing something. Dylan chimes in, I would rather watch Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers on a continuous loop than sit through another viewing of this one. Wow. Chad writes, No Time to Die. Daniel writes, The Manor, Bedknobs and Broomsticks, Tok Tok, My Mom's New Boyfriend, The Flower of My Secret, and The Ghost and Mr. Chicken. Happy October, Daniel. Jay writes, We saw The Last Duel. Really liked it. Well done. And glad you enjoyed the Tesla concert, Jay. Joan writes, Young Frankenstein. Nikki writes, Panic, and This Is Where I Leave You. Jared writes, Family Night Movie this week was Muppet's Haunted Mansion. Really highbrow stuff. Thank you, Jared. Britt writes, The Quarry, Superman, Superman 2, and Black Widow. George writes, I don't know if I mentioned this a while ago, but Legend, the movie about the craze, and deemed it brilliant. Molly writes, At the Tibbs Drive-In, staying safely inside the vehicle, away from the other moviegoers, Beetlejuice and the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Good call there, Molly. At Home, Hocus Pocus, Muppet's Haunted Mansion, Lego Batman, Overqualified Loser, Sightseers, and Warm Bodies. Kathy writes, All three parts of The Godfather. Judy writes, A good year. I was in the mood for some Russell Crowe. Okay, but predictable. That's okay. But you know, it's got Marion Cotillard in that, so there's that. Melissa writes, Vivarium, Halloween Kills, Ron's Gone Wrong, and Haunted Hotel. John writes, I highly, and this in quotes, recommend this one. Ultra campy. Yep, Tommy Chong in Evil Bong. That's a film. Tony writes, The Godfather and Babette's Feast. Ed writes, Halloween Kills and RoboCop. Mike writes, The Green Knight, No Time to Die, and The Nightmare Before Christmas. Megan writes, The Nevadan, but only because my dad made me. That happens, Megan. I know. I'm a dad. And I was a son. Still am. Pam writes, The 2009 TV film version of The Turn of the Screw. JR writes, From Beyond. Mark writes, In the Line of Fire and Melodrama with Megastars. Michelle writes, Muppets Haunted Mansion, the Russell Crowe Robin Hood, and the Keanu Reeves version of The Day the Earth Stood Still. Thank you, Michelle. Joe writes, Outlaw Justice, original title Long Kill from 1999, Another Pair of Aces, Songwriter, and Pagan King. Melveen writes, Red Trees, a documentary, Catch-22 by Mike Nichols is the best. One of my all-time favorites. Yeah, Melveen, that more people need to see Catch-22. I know that kind of got lost in the 1970 war film shuffle with Patton and MASH, but yeah, that's a good one. Robert Muggy. And by the way, Deep Blues has been reissued, remastered, and is now available on Blu-ray. So go check that out. I'm totally out of sync with your asking. So here's some highlights from the past few weeks. I'm sorry I ask early sometimes, friends. I'm hopefully going to get back on track, but I like working ahead sometimes. Center Stage, Afterlife, The Horse's Mouth, Cry Macho, Crimson Gold, The Many Saints of Newark, Clooney Brown, Stalag 17, The Mark of Zorro, and Wise Blood. Thank you, Robert. And congrats on the Blu-ray reissue. You might hear some of them on a very future Blues House Party. Stevie writes, just watched Crazy, the Hank Garland story, last night on streaming. It's from 2007, but I really enjoyed it. About a Nashville session guitar player who played with everyone from Elvis to every major country artist of that classic era. He wrote Jingle Bell Rock and got screwed out of the rights from old record labels. Thank you, Stevie. Jessica writes, lots of attempted horror. St. Maud, The Killing of a Sacred Deer. That's horror for a different reason. John Dies at the End and The Vigil. Eric writes, Over the Edge. That's a scary film of a different kind. Mary writes, The Rob Zombie Halloween 2, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, and Forbidden Planet. Wayne writes, The New Bond Flick, perhaps the best Bond flick ever. You're not the first one to say that, Wayne. I think it's pretty solid. Sometimes a couple questionable moments, but solid nonetheless. Chris Lloyd, if you go check out the Film Yap, you can also see him on Fox 59's morning show with his ponytail that's longer than mine. The French Dispatch, The Harder They Fall, Tom Petty, Somewhere You Feel Free, King Richard, Belfast, Dune, The Electrical Life of Lewis Wayne, Spencer, The Power of the Dog, Mass, and Tommy Boy. And he wrote something that I can't quite read here. But yes, he is tired. He is very tired. Sean writes Maniac and Wrong Turn. David writes a new season of the movies that made us, Aliens, Nightmare on Elm Street, Halloween, etc., and then watched Edward Scissorhands and 28 Days Later. Krista writes, I watched the new Velvet Underground documentary on Apple Plus. So great. Nick also watched the Velvet Underground documentary. Rebecca writes, Son of Frankenstein. Clay writes, An Unfinished Life. Michael writes, Ghost Story, the 1980 with Fred Astaire. I saw that in the theater, and that scared the daylights out of me. I should revisit it. Maybe I'll be braver. Amanda writes, At First Sight, and The Man Who Knew Too Much. Linda writes, Leap Year and two other rom-coms. But she didn't write what they were. Michael writes, Son of Frankenstein, La Strada, Breathless, and Hollywood Jamboree. And Gary writes, Venom, Let There Be Carnage, From Russia With Love, Goldfinger, and All About Eve. Kevin writes, Brian's Song and Sleepers. And finally, Cassandra writes, No films this week, but just finished Squid Game on Netflix. Whoa. All right. Thank you, Cassandra. And don't be a Cassandra. And there you are, friends. That's what you've been watching this week. So hopefully you got inspired to check out some new titles, or at least ones that are new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent Green is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Before we take off this week, I forgot to mention, I got to see the film Surge. This is a psychological downward spiral and liberating film at the same time. You go to this one to see the performance from Ben Whishaw. He plays an airport security member who, as the film goes on, is starting to seem to lose his foundations and lose basically his mind, but at the same time, he is liberated from the confines of maybe mainstream rural society, his work, money from a bank, being with a coworker. It's a well done. Don't know if I can watch it again, but it is a really intense performance from Whishaw, who goes through the physical ringer. One of the more cringeworthy moments is him biting into a drinking glass, and it kind of just spirals from there. I have not seen anything like this from Ben Whishaw before, and it's worth checking out for that performance set in one very long day in London. But it's something to watch. It's not for everybody, but if you're a fan of Ben Whishaw and you want to see one of the more intriguing performances of the year, check out Surge. That's out there. All right. Now, sorry I was late to that. So anyway, go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. And hope you're doing okay. And take care, everybody. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!